everyone. This is The Big Fight and I'm Maria Shakil. One nation, one election. Is it an idea whose time has come? Or is it a move against India's diversity and federal structure? The debate has been ongoing since 2017. But it has now reached a feverish pitch with the Union Cabinet approving the proposal of the high-level panel headed by former President of India, Ram Nath Kovind. The committee had recommended a two-stage process, with Lok Sabha and Assembly elections being synchronized first, then followed by elections to the panchayats and municipal corporations. Opposition says that free and fair elections are at stake and simultaneous elections were never part of the original constitutional scheme that was set up when India became independent. It also argues that the government doesn't have the two-third majority in parliament to ensure its passage, and hence it's a headline-grabbing exercise. The BJP and the NDA argue that there were simultaneous elections to the Lok Sabha and the Vidhan Sabhas from the first general election in 1952 till 1967. And elections mean huge expenditure and burden on the exchequer. Today, on an average, 5 elections are held every year. This year alone, in April, May, we saw Lok Sabha polls. Currently, elections are being held in Jammu and Kashmir and Haryana. And later, there will be elections in Maharashtra and Jharkhand. On the show tonight, we ask, will one nation, one election make India vibrant, participative and an effective democracy? Or will it really be what the opposition is saying, an attack on federal structure? Joining me first on the show is someone who was part of this panel, former Solicitor General of India, Harish Salve. Mr. Salve, my first question to you, sir, is how do you envision the constitutional amendments that will be necessary for implementing one nation, one election, and what are the potential challenges in getting them passed?
The challenges are always political, and fortunately, that's something which I don't need to worry about.
So in terms of amendments, I mean, what will be the process of amendments and how many amendments will be needed?
There will be one constitution amendment bill. That's all that is required. And when the report comes out, it is fairly, there'll be very minor changes to the constitution. Nothing major. The impact may be major, but the changes are minor.
Yes, but any constitutional amendment requires 2/3 of the House present and voting for it to come through. That is really the process.
Any constitution amendment requires 2/3 present and voting.
And it also requires states to come on board.
Not necessarily. Not unless it affects the states.
So how will you really go about in this legislation in case, you know, the draft bill comes in the parliament?
That's what I said. That phase two of this, i.e. getting it passed in parliament, is something which I don't know and I'm no part of.
Mr. Salve, you know, the critics are saying that this can have a potential impact on India's federal structure and the balance of power between the center and the states.
There is a chapter in the report. I suggest you read it. Because the federal structure does not depend upon when elections are held. The federal structure will be strengthened if the country has more time to govern and less time of being put on hold. In 5 years, I think we have had 65 days in which there has been no election. There's always the election going on in India. And the cost of governance and its impact on the GDP is something which is quantified in the report.
Can you really then outline a realistic implementation roadmap then, considering the complexities that are involved?
There's no great complexity involved. Only for the first year to synchronize everything, any assembly which may not have finished 5 years can be dissolved. And by the way, if you read the constitution, it doesn't prescribe a minimum length of life. It says that you it shall not be more than. It doesn't say it shall not be less than. And that's the founding fathers. In their wisdom, they drafted the constitution that way. So only one step would be to synchronize elections. Once that is done, if elections are once synchronized, if any assembly stands dissolved in less than 5 years, the re-elections are for the balance period. Once, and in the same principle could apply to parliament, that if parliament in some time is dissolved midterm, the elections will be for a balance period. This will also be a strong disincentive to the political system to destabilize elected governments. So once this kind of a structure is in place, if you want to do it, we can do it. It's no big deal. It's not a great upheaval of any kind. If you don't want to do it, we don't do it.
Of course, sir, you have spoken about that. There is a chapter which talks about cost saving, but I would ask that question nevertheless, because those who are saying that one nation, one election may not necessarily lead to significant cost saving and also reduce, you know, one of the arguments have been that it will reduce to electoral fatigue, but that may not be the case.
No, it's not the cost saving per se. It is the impact on governance and therefore it's the knock-on effect on GDP. There is a detailed econometric analysis which is in the report.
Okay, then how would this affect the model code of conduct and what changes would be necessary to ensure that it is effective?
The model code of conduct will be exactly what it is, just that it will be in force for 2 months or 3 months it takes to get the whole country past elections, and then for the rest of the 57 months that follow, the country, the governance in the country, whoever is in power, the governance in the country will be without any hindrance, will be without requiring security forces, deployment, civil servants, deployments, etc., without all the disruptions which are inevitable in any election.
Of course, one concern is also about regional issues, that one nation, one poll will not be able to address the concerns which are there playing out in various states.
We had elections, about 4 months ago? And what happened in Andhra? Chandrababu swept Andhra, the TDP. But when it came to Lok Sabha, they didn't do well at all. We've had this example in Delhi. Delhi had elections. I think BJP won 7 out of 7. 4 months later, Aam Aadmi Party swept the polls, even if they had been held simultaneously. See, we have to stop treating the Indian voter with such disrespect and disbelief. The Indian voter now is matured. The Indian voter is very wise. He knows how to distinguish between state and national issues.
And how would you really address the issues of different states, their assembly tenures and possible need for premature dissolution or extension of some?
It's only once you synchronize them, then if an assembly is dissolved prematurely, it gets elected for the balance period. And if you do an analysis, I must say it's been remarkable, except for some states where it's been an unstable political regimes, some of the smaller states. By and large, most big states have lasted 5 years. Governments may have changed, but the state has not, the assembly has not been dissolved for 5 years.
So legally, you are saying that you're of the opinion that it's very pragmatic and practical, although the opposition calls it not pragmatic.
I am nobody to, I don't profess any special knowledge on pragmatism. There are reasons for it. There are reasons, I'm sure there are some reasons against it. It's a question of what you prefer. Do you prefer to have this kind of a loose politics where all the time the country is on election mode and people are living in trenches? And the senior elected representative also, who are ministers, half the time run around the country fighting one election or the other. If you prefer, if you think that's better for democracy, well, that's your view of democracy. I think we need to get on more with governance and less with elections. If you subscribe to that point of view, then this is the better option.
Mr. Salvi, there is a group that thinks that because it will be an implemented in a phased manner. Of course, the first phase will have Lok Sabha and Assembly elections synchronized, and the second elections will be happening after 100 days, which will have urban bodies and panchayat polls. So how is this really one nation, one election?
The trouble is you can't say just because we can't do everything in one go, it should never be done at all. Let's try synchronizing phase one. If synchronizing phase one works well, if it doesn't work well, we abandon the idea. If it works well, these are all enabling provisions. Correct? These are not compulsions. These will be enabling provisions. In these enabling provisions, you give it a start, you try working it. If it doesn't work, you go back to the old system. If it works, you spread it to the next level.
Okay, so you think that a law of this nature can be put in place, although you're sounding very, very optimistic, but there are regional parties and almost 17 parties which had submitted its suggestion before the committee of which you were a part of, that they are not in favor of it. Then how will this country-wide narrative in favor of these elections will be built?
Well, I'm optimistic because I always believe in the good sense prevailing ultimately.
Okay, let me rephrase my question again, Mr. Salve, and ask you far more direct question, which could be perhaps the most intrinsic and basic question to ask. Why should India have one nation, one election?
Because of all the reasons given in the report, it is good governance, it is good economics, it is good for the rule of law, it is good for administration. And I think these are very valuable. I think we are a nation which is today on the move. India is heading towards its place in the sun. We should waste less time on politics and get on more with governance, get on more with life. And of course, elections are a must in a democracy. Try and finish them off in 3 months. And then the next 57 months, we get on with work.
And does it really destroy federalism and compromise democracy?
Absolute zero impact on federalism. Federalism doesn't depend on when elections are held. Federalism depends on the relationship between the union and the states. And if the same rule applies to union and the states, I don't see how it at all even touches federalism, leave alone affect it.
Okay, the opposition is also saying that there is some kind of hidden agenda to weaken India's federal system and bring some kind of, have extended power to the central government.
Unfortunately, I lack the facilities of x-raying people's minds and finding out hidden agendas. I can only tell you what agenda I know of. If they are privy to some hidden agenda, I'm sure you will have a full debate on hidden agendas.
So in terms of constitutional amendments, sir?
Yeah, they are all, the drafts are there in the report.
There is a school of thought which says that this is anti-democratic and also that the election commission doesn't really have the wherewithal or logistics, logistical preparations which are needed for conducting elections at this large scale. Because, right now there are two states which are going to polls. The opposition says that all those four states which are going to, which could have gone for elections, could have gone in for elections in one go.
There was a full paper presented by the Election Commission who was fully supportive of this. It's there in detail. And we have got into, I call it now the X culture. The X culture is all about one-liners. It is anti-democratic, death of democracy, constitution in suspension, federalism going upside down, blah, blah, blah. If you cut the catchphrases, go through the report, engage with the detail. I'm sure if there are criticism of the report, those criticism can be leveled. And if a powerful argument dealing with the fundamentals on which the report is premised is made, the decision would be settled. And if there is no powerful argument other than catchphrases, it should go on. But this is a very, without reading the report, it's like saying, I don't know what you're saying, but I disagree with you. So I think that's become the new mantra in politics. You don't care to listen what the other person is saying. You say, I don't know, I can't hear you, but I disagree with you.
Since the high-level committee is calling this as a big, electoral reform, is India really trying to follow any other country's model?
India has reached a point where we are creating models, not following models. Tell me which country has 600 million people going and voting? and is a federation of this kind. So what's the use saying, how can you compare yourself to United Kingdom? You have to see the way elections are conducted. Don't even ask you for your ID. You go, you give your name, you go, you vote, and you go home. That's their culture. They don't need all this. So you have to, there's no, one size fits all in these kind of rules.
Within the committee, sir, of course, were all the views unanimous? Because it's 18,626-page document. Consultations, of course, were held over 191 days.
The report was unanimous. There were people who sent representations saying, good idea. There were some people who criticized and said this should not be done. And there are some people who said, we do not join the committee, despite being invited to. So that's how the report was given.
Mr. Salve, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for speaking to NDTV. We bring in the second newsmaker now, Mr. P. Chidambaram, senior Congress leader and former union minister, is joining me now. Mr. Chidambaram, straight question, what are your concerns with One Nation, One Election? Of course, one of the pros that have been cited by the high-level committee has been that frequent elections burden the exchequer with additional expenditure, and these staggered elections actually induce voters' fatigue.
There is no voter fatigue. Even in elections held in Jammu and Kashmir, the voter turnout was high, 60% in some constituencies and 70%. Voter fatigue is an imagination of the BJP and the COVID committee, be that as it may. Now, suppose it is planned to hold simultaneous elections in 2029. That is, the Lok Sabha will run its full term from 2024 to 2029. And suppose the constitution amendments are passed in December 2024, as hinted by the government. Imagine what will happen to state assemblies elected in 2025, 2026, 2027, and 2028. There are 24 state assemblies that are going to go to elections between 2025 and 2028. There are 10 alone in 2028. You know what the recommendation is? The recommendation is that a state assembly elected in 2025 will have a term of 4 years. The one elected in 2026 will have a term of 3 years. The ones elected in 2027 will have a term of 2 years. And, horror of horrors, the ones elected in 2028 will have a term of 1 year. 24 state assemblies will have truncated periods of 1 to 4 years. Is that not a waste of money? And why would a state, and why would the electorate of a state, agree to an election in 2028 when they know that the assembly they will elect has a life of only 1 year? Is that not a huge waste of money?
But sir, you know, these are initial hiccups. The view of the members of the panel and also of the government is that after it is synchronized, it will all go well.
There is no synchronization. There is no guarantee of synchronization. Suppose there are simultaneous elections held in 2029, according to the plan. What happens if a state assembly is dissolved, or the chief minister resigns, or there's a hung assembly in 2030, there is no synchronization. Again, an election will be held for a part term. Suppose a Lok Sabha is dissolved, what will happen? The Lok Sabha will be elected for a term of 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. What a waste of time to hold an election to the Lok Sabha when the term of the Lok Sabha will be 1 to 3 years. There is no guarantee that a government elected for 5 years and a state assembly elected for 5 years will remain in office for all the 5 years. Where is the guarantee? The COVID committee does not even contemplate such a situation. It has contemplated it in the sense that its answer is, let's elect an assembly for a part term. How is electing an assembly or electing a Lok Sabha for a part term, some terms as short as 1.5 years, how is that advance the cause of the nation or save money?
Mr. Chidambaram, now it will be about the Constitution Amendment Bill, you know, because the ball has been set into motion.
Don't jump to conclusions. All these amendments, constitution amendments, the new articles that are proposed to be introduced and the amendments to existing articles, I've got a list of them, will all require a 2/3 majority of the members present and voting in each house.
That's
and the
right.
BJP, mercifully, does not have a 2/3 majority. They will not be able to pass these constitution amendments.
Okay. So, if the BJP doesn't have the numbers, which is, of course is a prerequisite for ensuring any constitution amendment, then what really is the future of this move?
This move is dead on arrival. That's all. It's dead on arrival. I mean, there's no reason to change the present system. Please read page 244 and 245 of the COVID committee recommendations. There has been remarkable stability in 5 out of 7 decades of elections between 1951 and 1923. There have been remarkable stability. In fact, there has been no instability whatsoever since 2001. Since 2001, the Lok Sabha has been stable. And there has been hardly any instability in the state governments. State governments have continued, state assemblies have continued for 5 years. The chief minister may have been changed, especially in BJP-ruled states. But the assembly has been there for 5 years. And the government, whichever party, has been there for 5 years.
Okay.
So this this bogey of huge instability in state assemblies, state governments, is a pure fiction.
But sir, isn't it also a fact that frequent elections lead to disruption of government machinery? Governance suffers, supply chains get thwarted, business investments, economic growth, all that is impacted in that period in which the elections are being held because of the model code of conduct being in place.
Months get wasted, weeks get wasted because the election commission is scheduling elections to suit the Honorable Prime Minister. Tamil Nadu and Pondicherry have 40 seats. Elections are held in one day. Why should Madhya Pradesh, with 29 seats, have 4 phases of election? Why should Bengal, with 42 seats, have 7 phases of election? Why should Haryana and Jammu Kashmir have a different schedule? And why is Maharashtra postponed by I don't know, another 2 months. Why is Jharkhand next year? All this is to enable the Honorable Prime Minister to travel practically every day and address an election rally every day. Elections can be held in one phase, maximum 2 or 3 phases. And the 3 phases can be compressed in 1 week. Please allow us to choose 3 election commissioners. I will choose 3 election commissioners who will agree to hold elections all over the country in 1 week. The first polling will be on a Sunday, The second polling will be on a Wednesday, and the third polling date will be on a Saturday or Sunday. The whole thing can be done in 1 week. Why should there be several weeks before the election schedule is conducted? This election commission, the present election commission and the past couple of election commissioners have played to the tune of the government, the BJP government. That is why elections are elongated. There's no reason at all why the election schedule should be elongated.
Mr. Chidambaram, will the constitutional amendments, if it is indeed passed by the parliament, be challenged in the Supreme Court? The reason why I'm asking it is because we are trying to understand what is the future of this report, which has been approved and now being approved by the cabinet.
You are doing a head count without realizing that most of these parties exist on paper.
Yes. The 30 parties,
they
which actually
appeared. They can't win a single assembly seat or a single parliament seat. They are registered as a political party and you are doing a head count. Count the relevant political parties. Now, I have no worry about challenging the constitution amendments. Hmm. The constitution amendments will not pass, will be defeated on the floor of the Lok Sabha and the Rajya Sabha.
Okay.
Therefore, the constitution amendments will not become law.
Okay.
And only a law has to be challenged in court.
So my last question to you, what will be the strategy of the India bloc parties if this actually comes up in the upcoming winter session of parliament?
If it comes up in the winter session, I welcome it. We will defeat it in the winter session. The India bloc parties have made it absolutely clear that they will vote against this one nation, one election, bizarre idea. We will vote against it and we will defeat it. They do not have, the BJP knows, it does not have a two-third majority in the Lok Sabha or the Rajya Sabha. Two-thirds of the members present and voting and one-half of the House. They don't have it. And all that we need to muster is one-third of the members present and voting. Remember what happened in V.P. Singh's time? Constitutional amendments were defeated because he could not muster the majority. And we will defeat these proposed constitution amendments. Mercifully, the constitution cannot be altered to change the majority required for passing a constitution amendment under Article 368. In fact, the Kovind Committee assumes, let me repeat that word, the Kovind Committee assumes that the government of the day has a two-third majority in the Lok Sabha and the Rajya Sabha of the members present and voting, and they will pass the bills. The Kovind Committee only talks about ratification by one half of the states, and it points out that several of the amendments do not require to be ratified, and some amendments require to be ratified. But we are not at the stage of ratification. We are at the stage of passing these constitution amendment bills. And my calculation, the numbers, you know the numbers as well as I do, the numbers have been published in all the newspapers yesterday and day before. The BJP government, the NDA government, simply does not have a majority of two-thirds of the members present and voting in either the Lok Sabha or the Rajya Sabha.
Mr. P. Chidambaram, I appreciate your time here on NDTV. Thank you so much and for joining us and sharing your thoughts. Let me bring in the panelists now. Dr. Joy Kumar, National Spokesperson of the Congress. Shahzad Poonawalla, National Spokesperson of the BJP. Manu Sundaram, National Spokesperson of the DMK. And we have Krishna Prasad, National Spokesperson of the TDP. Shahzad Poonawalla, beginning with you, you know, because points being made here by Mr. P. Chidambaram was that you do not have the numbers. You know, that is the fact. The changed reality is of the Parliament of India. So, you know, there is that assumption by the panel that you have the numbers to ensure its passage first. And second, how is it really strengthening of democracy if, you know, various assemblies' durations are curtailed?
Thank you, Maria. The last time Mr. Chidambaram showed as much cynicism that he showed in the last 10 minutes while talking to you, it was about the concept of UPI, where he mocked the common man of India and his potential or her potential to use UPI. I'm sure your viewers remember that clip. It went very viral when today we register the highest number of UPI transactions. And perhaps the Congress party, and I quote Mr. Chidambaram, feels that this idea is a bizarre idea. Perhaps he's making a commentary on Nehruji and a bit of Indiraji, because this was in place till 1967. Also, Mr. Chidambaram, since he appears alone and one-on-one rather than a discussion or a debate, which should be the norm for a democracy, he gets away by telling you things like Tamil Nadu was held in one phase and Bengal was held in many other phases. Does he know that his own party, Mr. Adhiranjan Chaudhary, demanded multiple phases of elections in Bengal because of the political violence? Surely, Tamil Nadu and West Bengal are not equatable, and having different phases of elections does not mean that it's not one nation, one election. What we say, one nation, one election, means that in a cycle of elections, the entire election process is completed so that we are in election mode for 6 months at most, and 4.5 years, we are in then Vikas mode. By the way, let me tell you, Mr. Chidambaram also ridiculed the political parties, saying that these are on paper parties. Does he mean to say JDU, TDP, BSP, NCP of Sharad Pawar, PDP of Mehbooba Mufti, which is part of the India Alliance, are all parties on paper? Because they were all supported. In fact, Samajwadi Party wanted it pronto implemented in 2018 and 2023. Having said that, let me make another couple of points and then hand it over to my good friend Ajoy Kumar. Mr. Chidambaram misled you, Maria, when he said that supposing an assembly election is due in 28, he said 24 are, some of them are due in 28. In that scenario, Maria, common sense, and I guess common sense is not that common, would be that those assembly tenures would be extended by 1 year. So perhaps if you go by the example, say a UP in 27, a Punjab, Aam Aadmi Party in 27, another state which is in 27, let's take Uttarakhand, all of these will be naturally extended. They will not go for a 2 year election. They will go for an extension of tenure. Yes, the other ones could be curtailed. So in net, some states, whether it's BJP or opposition, will have an extension of their tenure. Some of them will have a curtailment of their tenure. It will not be a political or partisan decision. But let me point out something very interesting, which is there in the Cohen report. You know, it's not about the actual election expenses that we save or the logistical savings that we make. One part which talks about the economic and social impact, Maria, in the Cohen report, which is out in the public domain, says that every time the elections are held simultaneously, the impact on the GDP is a positive 1%, 1.5%. And in today's time, it would have amounted to 4.5 lakh crores. The positive impact on inflation is a reduction of inflation by 1%. And the positive impact on fiscal deficit has also been calculated and tabulated. And therefore, there is not just financial savings, economic savings, savings via good governance, savings via policy continuation. I'll give you one last practical example. Ajoy's main grouse with the BJP is twofold. One, Modi ji hamesha chunav mode mein rehte hain. Two, that the BJP is a great electoral machinery. Well, this is a great level playing field. The Prime Minister, as per you, will now not be in Chunavi mode. He'll be in work mode 4.5 years. Okay, Chunavi Dr. mode only 6 months Dr. for all of us. Ajoy, and secondly, if we are a great electoral machinery, well, everyone gets to pool in their resources at one time.
Dr. Ajoy Kumar?
So I'm amazed that Shahzad Poonawalla should join, soothsaying, because he seems to know what I want to say. So power to him. So funny things. First of all, it won't affect Mr. Modi because he's supposed to retire according to your guys' own rule. But I am deeply troubled for the BJP and for Mr. Modi, because what will he do in his life? He will lose his purpose of his life. That is only campaigning. I am worried for my prime minister because he's made only for this. There is no governance. He just hops onto any plane to go anywhere. If he can't find time to do an election, he will go and hop on to Budapest or Hungary or some other place. So first of all, Maria, seriously, please communicate to our Prime Minister that we are very worried that what is he going to do with this time if there's one nation, one election. Now, coming to a very important thing. Specious, and please give me a reasonable amount of time and I'll counter all this. There was this lot of paper on demonetization. Nobody speaks on demonetization. Great, excellent, corruption gone, terrorism gone. Same thing with this NK Singh and Prachi Mishra's nonsensical paper. no peer review, no economist review, nobody has checked those numbers, and suddenly 1% inflation down, 1% revenue up. I mean, is this some kind of a la-la land, this country? Is this some kind of a crazy country which doesn't have any kind of respect? We are saying we are Vishwaguru. We become a laughing stop. Some NK Singh and Prachi Mishra produces some paper and they all go spilling, you know, spewing this kind of nonsense. Has it been reviewed by anybody? No. And any country worth its salt would have reviewed this nonsensical data. Same nonsense was given to you on the demonetization and so many other things. Two, they have succeeded definitely on one thing. To divert attention from the Dalit houses being burned in Bihar, from the long march of Wangchuk from Ladakh, from the IPS officers beating a custodial violence in Chhattisgarh, to the repeated failures of this government. So, Maria, so we have what's happened in this country is, and no, and it's very important. What are the TV debates happening today? And they have succeeded. Because, look, why did they bring this? And you'll have to, and it's not any particular anchor's fault, but please indulge me for, since you have been, we've been old colleagues, and I'm sure Shahzad Poonawalla, since we are old friends, would indulge me, that what is happening is, whether it is the Supreme Court order on the bulldozer, whether it's the Dalit homes on fire, whether it is the IPS officers beating somebody to death, whether it is Medha Patkar's Jal Satyagraha, what has happened, it's out of the mainstream media because this is the failure of this government and they don't have the numbers. Now, so constitutionally and legislatively, few challenges, which I would really like to be enlightened with the people on the panel.
Okay, let me...
You need two... One sec, let me complete. The crux is this. You need 2/3 of the people present for a constitutional amendment. So they know it will not happen. So they know. So why did they do this? Again, I'm telling you, Haryana elections and Jammu and Kashmir divert because I'm both
incumbent. Okay, so this is a diversionary tactic. A quick response from you.
Absolutely.
Shahzad, a word, and then I bring in others, please. Go ahead.
With due respect to my dearest friend Ajay Kumarji, first of all, I am no soothsayer, Ajayji. I just predict your cynicism because I've seen it in ONOP now. I have seen it in UCC. I have seen it in GST. I have seen it in Aadhaar. Ideas started by you have now been dumped by you because you've changed the position where you sit. Mr. Ajay, I did not interrupt you. Please have the patience to let me complete.
I never spoke.
Secondly, Ajayji, with all due regard, and I regard your services... I'm sorry. Then it must
spoke,
it must have been an audio glitch from my end.
It is
an audio glitch.
Okay, sir. Sir.
You're not going to like what's coming next, though, Ajay. Look, Ajay. As much as I respect your services in uniform, Ajay, the last person.
Move on.
Now you're interrupting me, Maria. Now he's interrupting me. Let me complete here. Ajay, as much as I respect your services in uniform, you are the last person the Prime Minister or I are seeking validation or purpose in life from. I'll simply tell you why. Because if your political trajectory is to be taken sometimes in AAP, sometimes in Congress, so it will be a
no
messy affair for us to
and
take
about,
validation or purpose
you,
of
yeah,
life from
you.
But I, no, he made one at the Prime Minister.
Maria,
he made one at the Prime Minister. Maria,
yeah.
Please allow me.
Will you allow me to complete?
I have taken it in good spirit. Maria, this is not right. He made an attack at the Prime Minister. You are stopping me from allowing me to come back to that. This is not right.
Maria,
this is not right. He made a comment on the Prime Minister.
Ajay, please.
Maria, he made a comment on the Prime Minister.
I will have to stop this and move on to others. Because I do not like this kind of...
No, Maria, you will not stop it. You will allow me to complete.
Please tell him that he wants to get
busted. Please let me complete.
Go ahead, Shahzad.
Please let me complete.
Go ahead, Shahzad.
Let me complete.
Mr. Poonawalla, let me start with your black history, sir.
Look, Maria, he's interrupting me.
Okay,
this is not the way things are done on
ADTV
now, and not on your
Manu Sundaram, I am going through the article.
No, let me complete. Maria, this is not right. Maria, this is not right. Maria, if you're not going to let me complete, I will get up from the debate. Maria, if you do not let me complete, I will get up from the debate.
You don't have to.
I was making my point. He interrupted me.
On the show,
he interrupted
please.
Me. I will.
You don't have to take that tone on the show.
No,
please.
No. You cannot. He can't interrupt me and not let me complete.
Let's please calm
I have
down.
Not said anything wrong.
Calm
yeah,
down.
Let me complete then. Please yes. let me complete.
30 seconds
Please
you'll get.
Complete.
Calm down.
Let me complete, Bud.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you. Maria, I choose not to use personal attacks, but if you attack the Prime Minister, I'm left with no option. Having said that, I want to move on from that. Now let me come to the points that Mr. Ajoy was addressing. Ajoy ji said that I'm quoting from some report. I am quoting from the Kovind report. I'm not quoting from some report. It is a report made by a former president who comes from the SC community. I know that sometimes Mr. Ajoy Kumar has had a tendency of saying that Draupadi Murmu has an evil mindset. Now, if he thinks that Mr. Ramnath does not have the intellectual prowess like him, then that's for him to decide. That is for him to decide. But having said that, let me say...
We have just enough time for Manu Sundaram and Krishna Prasad. Now, let's have both of them on the screen. Manu Sundaram, coming to you, you know, since you have made an argument about how free and fair elections are at stake, there is a valid argument which is being made also by the BJP here, essentially talking about how this will ensure that the longevity of that there is no distraction in elections, you know, that the governance will not suffer, the processes will be better. And I think that's a fair argument to make.
Well, I think my problem is not in whether it's a fair argument, Maria. I think it's my problem is with the people who are making that argument. The elections of this country, especially those to the parliament and the state legislative assemblies, are the prerogative of the Election Commission of India, a constitutional body set up under Articles 324 to 329 of the Constitution. Now, therein the problem lies. In 2017, Pranab Mukherjee, then President of India, in his Republic Day address, speaks for the first time, at least as far as I can tell, since India became independent, that the government, that we should all consider simultaneous elections. But President Pranab Mukherjee, speaking for Mr. Modi's government then, goes one step further. He says that the Election Commission should take this up and look into this immediately. My problem is just that, Maria. Today, we are talking about a report given by a high-level committee constituted under the former President Ramnath Kovind, but the committee itself was constituted by the Union Home Ministry in September 2023. These are matters that should have been in the exclusive authority of the Election Commission of India, not a committee, however high it may be, but constituted by the Home Ministry of the Union Government. Secondly, the federal farce in this is that, as many speakers before me have pointed out, one vote in Tamil Nadu gives me only 2 years because I went to election in 26 or 27, whereas an election in another state gives me 5 years of term, right? This is the federal farce or the incongruence, which is actually barred by the Constitution in Article 172, which they're seeking to amend. Thirdly, the logistical impossibility. I think you've raised this with Mr. Salve and others. We do not have enough EVMs. We are going to spend a fortune buying EVMs and, of course, doubling or tripling our security forces because elections, as we all know, are conducted under the supervision and security of the CISF. My last point is the inherent bias of the committee itself. The committee, like I said, was constituted by the Home Ministry. It seems to have a predetermined mindset, but it also suffered from another large bias. It was unrepresentative of India's diversity and the concerns of the states. Now, yes, it's true, many states, many parties, many outfits and organizations were allowed to go and present their concerns before this committee. But the committee itself was not representative. It should have been extremely well regarded and representative because it was dealing with such a massive issue. And that is why I say that the future of our democracy, the future of elections as we know it, the future of free and fair elections is completely at stake. Now, my last point is this. This is a government, however laudable their intent with the simultaneous polls may be, this is the government whose president dissolved the elected state government of Jammu and Kashmir in November 2018, which you may remember when Chief Minister Mehbooba Mufti was in government. Now, for 6 years since then, nearly 6 years, they have not held an election in Jammu and Kashmir. Now, this is a government, this is the same government who's talking about the future of elections, the importance of elections in one go. That's where my problem lies. And as others have pointed out, we've not seen a notification for Maharashtra, which should have gone to polls along with Haryana. There is no plausible explanation. And this is where I think the Election Commission's role is also extremely dubious. So I think it's on these basis that we find that this is maybe it's a dream too far or something that is a complete logistical impossibility, which I do not know for my little understanding why the government has brought up at this moment.
Okay. Krishna Prasad, the fact is that all the NDA allies are on board. And this is, of course, the need of the hour in many ways as well, because of how a lot of time gets wasted in multiple elections every year, five elections this year alone. But the question is of numbers. Do you really have the numbers, the two-third majority which is needed to ensure the passage of constitutional amendment?
Yeah, Maria, there are two things, two aspects of the entire thing. One is whether you desire to have simultaneous elections in a country to save so many things or not is first issue. Second issue is how do you make it possible in case you all think it is a requirement or the country needs it. So the first part is, a lot of things have been said about it. Who conducts the elections? The elections are conducted by the government machinery and also made possible by the police forces. Now, within the government machinery, who are these people? They are all teachers, they are school teachers and the revenue department or the IAS officers and the tehsildars, etc., etc. And if every year you are going to drag them out of the schools from the teaching position or conducting the governance to the polling station and make them conduct elections for five states year after year, and every year you are losing their time, poor children, what are they being taught? So the entire governance is taking a dent in the entire process. So the desirability is the first part. So if you all say it is desirable, then why are we arguing about aisa hota to kya hota, aisa hota to kya hota, this is not possible, that is not possible, who is having two-third majority, who is not having two-third, that is a secondary issue, that is a secondary matter. If you are happy that BJP is not having a two-third majority, but then you be happy about it. But what you basically want is whether you want a simultaneous election to save the government money, the exchequer or not, is primary. If you are a real true national lover and if you love your country, you like your country, you don't want to waste your money, your resources, very, very powerful resources who should have been teaching your children in the school. The powerful resources who have been actually should be doing the governance of the country. You are dragging them every year to the polling station. And this is a sad state of affairs. Why do you always try to get personal about the party or personal about a political leader or personal about another friend of yours who is participating in the debate? No, please don't get personal about these things. Talk about the concept. Are you in agreement with the concept or not is a basic question. That's a primary thing. Secondary things, all other things. India is a mighty country. I love my country, have great faith in my country. It can stand up to any expectations. It can rise up to any expectations. After all, this country has shown and marched from the 11th position to the 5th position, and it is mighty strong to march to the 3rd position.
All right.
I have all the faith in them.
We have really come to the end of this discussion, Krishna Prasad. That's the right way to end this discussion. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Joy Kumar, Shehzad Poonawalla and Manu Sundaram. That's all from me on this episode of The Big Fight. I'll be joining you next week with another episode and we will be talking about the big issue that day as well. Thanks so much for watching.